major part of the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, a work written by Rupa Goswami. Not too large, but it's a small book. But has all information about who is the Supreme Lord. It's quite different from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is two stories by Sanatana Goswami. This is just a philosophical work. The subject of Supreme Lord or God or Ishvara or Parameshvara or Bhagavan is an interesting question, because people have different ideas about God, and it may be a little bit difficult to reconcile these concepts of God. We do have, in the modern world, we have interfaith dialogues where we get together with other religions, the Christians and the Jews, and maybe the Buddhists and the Islamic persons and Hindus, and we have discussions, you know, about different topics like that to create some sort of understanding. But still there is some big differences. Of course, one difference we can clear up, at least the Gaudiyas or the Vaishnavas can clear up with other religions, is one God. So we've got common ground. If you talk to the, let's say, the Kama Mimamsakas, for instance, then there is no one God. So then there's a big difference between that religion and Christian religion and Judaism and Islam. They say one God. And so they'll condemn the Hindus as polytheists or something like that, worshipping many gods. So that is so for, you know, Karma Mimamsa philosophers and people like that. They worship many devatas. So we have more, as Vaishnavas, we have more in common with the major religions of the world. Of course, there's still a little gap, let's say, between Buddhism and everything else, because a lot of the Buddhist philosophies have no God at all, which is very different from Western religions where there is a supreme God. This also makes it very strange how many Westerners become attracted to Buddhism, because it's so different from the tradition. There's no God at all. Very strange. But they become attracted to that. Anyway, the Vaishnavas do have God, and we have one God, so that's something in common with the major religions of the world, except for Buddhism. But we find within the scriptures themselves there are many concepts of God. If we just take out the devata worship, which is actually material, and we go to the spiritual level, we'll find even in the Vedic literature there is differing concepts of God. So we have the most impersonal aspect of God, that is Brahman, which is spiritual realization of God with no form, no qualities, and no activities. Then we have a functional aspect of God we call Paramatma. So one, this is God who creates the material world, destroys the material world, controls the material world, monitors the material world, and witnesses the material world. Okay? So that's one function of the Supreme Lord. And then we have the most intimate, that is conception of the Lord, that is Bhagavan. That is Supreme Lord who has various intimate relationships with the devotees. So of course Paramatma and Bhagavan may have the same form. Vishnu is Paramatma, Vishnu is in Vaikuntha, and he can function as Bhagavan or as Paramatma. But the function is a little different. One is creative function for the material world, as Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. The one is Bhagavan, who's in the spiritual world, associating with his devotees, in past lives with his devotees. So that is Bhagavan. So we have, within the Vedic literature, we have these different concepts, which are summarized in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. This is, quite unique to the Bhagavatam, perhaps, and to the Gaudiya philosophy, because we accept all of these as aspects of one God. Whereas the distinctions between Parama and Bhagavan are not very distinct in the Ramanuja or Madhva Sampradaya, for instance. And the concept of Brahman is often rejected completely as a bona fide realization, as being impossible. Impossible is impossible to have no form and no qualities and no activities for any spiritual realization. So we are unique in that we accept the Brahman as an actual realization, but a lesser realization. And why we accept it? Because that's what Bhagavatam says. And this is the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we accept all three aspects of God. Of the three, they're not all equal. At the top we have Bhagavan. So one meaning of the word can be to take the syllables, ba, ga, and va, and analyze it that way. So just as we may analyze the word diksha into diksha, divya jnanam, and papasya sankhaya, diksha, or mamsa into mam and sa, me and he. So we can analyze Bhagavan in a ba, ga, and va. So ba stands for bharta, which means the supporter, or the nourisher, the maintainer, or the establisher of the devotee, one who maintains the devotees. Okay? So that's ba, bharta. Ga, gamayata, which literally means to make, achieve, or to make go, or he who creates qualities in his devotees, or manifests qualities and spiritual qualities in his devotees, who he grants prema to the devotees, or he who gives Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, to the devotees. He makes the devotee go to the spiritual world. So that is ga, gamayata. And va, for vas, which means to live. So all the devotees reside in the Lord, which means the Lord is always thinking of the devotees. And he resides in all the devotees. That means all the devotees are always thinking of him. So this is one meaning of Bhagavan. Which is quite appropriate, because as we know, Bhagavan describes the Lord in relationship with the devotees. So we see all of these words, ba, ga, and va, all refer to the Lord's interaction with his devotees. Thinking of them, bestowing things to them, and supporting them in all ways. The other meaning, of course, is quite common. This is the one we usually quote for Bhagavan. He has six opulences, six particular qualities. Or Aishwarya, Virya, Yasa, Shri, Jnana, Vairagya. So he has six qualities. Aishwarya, and naturally he just controls everything without having to exert his powers. He is the ultimate independent controller of everything. This, of course, is more a lordship quality. Virya, inconceivable potencies by which he manifests and pervades all the universe and the jiva and expands his unlimited avatar. So he's got special shakti by which he can manifest so many different forms in all sorts of universes. Yasa means fame. That means he has all wonderful qualities which people will praise. Good qualities of body, sense, mind, and words. So in all aspects, the Lord is praiseworthy. Shri, all good fortune, all beauty, all youth. He has all wonderful, youthful, beautiful quality to him. Jnana, which means omniscience, he knows everything. And Vairagya, completely unaffected by matter. He can create universes, he can enter into universes. He manages sattva-gun, but he is unaffected by any matter. So this is a list of qualities also. Of course, we can say that a lot of these, we can say, refer to the material world, like the Vairagya, or Jnana, or Virya, and Aishwarya, more or less, to the creation of the world and maintenance of the material world. And maybe they can say the Shri refers to the sweet aspect of the Lord, the personal aspect with his beauty, etc. So this is the other definition given to Bhagavan. In any case, he is the personal form of God who relates with his devotees. The Paramatma is a personal form of God who functions to manifest the material world. So that's the difference, though they actually both are spiritual forms, and they may be the same form. There's a difference in function. So, the forms of Bhagavan. So the topmost form is Swayam Rupa, or Swayam Bhagavan. That is the form of Krishna. So, this is a mainstay of the Gaudiya interpretation of the Bhagavatam and of the scriptures, that we have different forms of the Lord, and the topmost form is Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. So this is mentioned in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, I think in the third chapter. And our acharyas say this is the theme of the whole Bhagavatam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Of all the forms of the Lord, Krishna is the ultimate form. So we put him at the top. So any form of God is independent. They're all one God, of course, but this particular form is, let's say, the source of all other forms, or he includes all other forms. We cannot really say he's the source because all forms are eternal. So we can't say there's a source of the jiva also. But similarly, there's no source of any form of the Lord. They're all eternal, but nevertheless, we put Krishna in a special position. So he's called the Swayam Rupa form, or Swayam Bhagavan. He can expand that form into many identical forms. So these are called Prakashas. So in Dwarka, Krishna expands himself, and he's in 16,108 palaces. And when Narada Muni went there, he was astonished to see that Krishna was in every palace. Narada Muni went from one palace to the next real quick because he could go at the speed of the mind. And there he saw Krishna. Then he went to another palace really quick, and Krishna was also there. Suddenly he realized Krishna was in all the palaces, and he looked very closely and he said, "It's actually Krishna. It's not some secondary form, it's actually Krishna." But he had expanded his form into all of these other forms, which are exactly Krishna. So these are called Prakash forms. Expansion of the form. So Krishna may also do this in Vrindavan. So when Krishna was in the Rasa-lila with 3 billion gopis, then he expanded himself into 3 billion forms. And there was one gopi, one Krishna, one gopi, one Krishna, one gopi, one Krishna, and they made a big circle. So, but they were all Krishna. And each gopi thought, "This Krishna's with me." Or when Krishna is with the cowherd boys, there's millions of cowherd boys that go out with Krishna to play in the fields every day. So we may think, well, how does anyone see Krishna? We got a crowd of 1 million people, and Krishna's there in the middle someplace, and no one can see him. But Krishna expands, and he's with each cowherd boy, and they're eating lunch. He's eating lunch with each cowherd boy individually. So this is the Prakash forms of the Lord. Many, he expands into many forms. Like that. Okay. Then we have what are called Tad-ik Atma-rupa forms, which are actually the same in one sense, because they're all Bhagavan. They're not jivas. They're Bhagavan, but they're slightly different. They may be called Vilas forms, slightly less qualities, with a different form, like Vishnu forms, etc. The Vishnu forms have 60 qualities, Krishna has 64 qualities, for instance, like that. And then we may have Svaamsa forms, slightly less qualities. So for instance, we have a Vishnu form in Vaikuntha, then we have Mahavishnu, who looks exactly like the Vaikuntha form, but he's manifesting a little less qualities. Or then we have an expansion, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, after Mahavishnu. So he has slightly less qualities manifested than Mahavishnu. So he's the Swamsa of Mahavishnu. And then we get avesh forms. These are actually not the Supreme Lord at all. They're quite different. They're jivas. But they're classified like the Lord or put in the same category as avatar, etc. because they have special powers given by the Lord. So they're above the normal jivas. So these are what we call shaktiavesh avatars. So these are eternal forms that are in the spiritual world, and they also manifest within the material world. So we have forms like Narada Muni. So his form is eternal. And we find him in the spiritual world and also coming to the material world. So they're specific with special functions. So we have the Avesh Rupa, which are actually not Bhagavan, they're jivas. Then we have the Tadikatma forms, which may be lesser or more. The Svaamsa forms, or what was the other one? It was the Vilas forms. And then we get the Swayam Rupa Krishna at the top. So when these forms appear in the material world, they are called avatars. Avatar means to descend. So they're in the spiritual world, and then they may descend into the material world. So any form that of the Lord that appears within the material world, we call an avatar. So that's why we have these Vishnu forms called Purusha avatars, the Vishnu forms, because they are forms who manifest within the material world. Or we call them Shaktavesh avatars. The Avesh forms, when they manifest in the material world, they're called avatars. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll find these broad classifications of avatar types. Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Lila avatars, Manvantara avatars, and Yuga avatars. They slightly differ in function, and some of them overlap a little bit. Like the Guna avatars, Lila avatars and Manva avatars overlap a little bit, and the Purusha avatars and the Guna avatars overlap slightly. So, Purusha avatars are easy to understand. We have lots of mention of these forms. We have Mahavishnu, or Sankarshan. He is the one that glances over Prakriti, and then Mahatattva manifests, and then Mahatattva turns into Ahankara, and then we get all the elements, and then we get universes formed. So this is one Purusha avatar. These Purusha avatars are also called Paramatma forms. And in the Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami describes these forms. So Paramatma is not only the form in the heart, he's also Mahavishnu, he's also a Paramatma form because he's related to the material world. So Mahavishnu is definitely related to the material world by glancing over Prakriti, so he's a Purusha avatar. When all the universes are formed, then we find that this form of Mahavishnu manifests again within all the universes as Garbhodakshai Vishnu. Garbhodakshai Vishnu literally means one who is lying on the Garbhodak ocean. So within the material world, there's a big ocean at the bottom, and Vishnu is lying on that ocean. And then from his navel, a lotus springs up, and then Brahma is born. So this is Garbhodakshai Vishnu, or Pradumna. So he manifests within, he's a monitor of each individual universe, and Mahavishnu is, or Karnodakshai Vishnu, one who sleeps on the Karna ocean. He is in charge of all the universes. And then in each universe, we've got one individual Vishnu, that is Garbhodakshai Vishnu. Then within the universe again, we have Kshirodakshai Vishnu, who's sleeping on the milk ocean. We have a milk ocean as well as a salty ocean, so he has a little island there on the, or big island, on the milk ocean. And this is Kshirodakshai, one who sleeps on the milk ocean, or one who lies in the milk ocean. And he expands himself into all the living entities in the material world, all the jivas. So this is the Paramatma in the heart, so to speak. So these are the three Purusha avatars. In this way, the Supreme Lord penetrates everything within Prakriti. He's in charge of Prakriti as Mahavishnu. He penetrates into each universe as Garbhadakshavishnu, and he penetrates into each jiva as Kshirodakshavishnu. So this way, he's everywhere. Everywhere within the Prakriti and outside Prakriti. So these forms have to do with material world, the Purusha avatars, and also called Paramatma forms. Guna avatars. When Mahavishnu glances over Prakriti, then Prakriti begins to manifest gunas. First Sattva Gun as Mahatattva, and Sutra as Rajagun, and then Ahankara as Tamagun. And then these gunas begin to display their qualities with the in the material world by manifesting the different elements, and then the elements combine into objects and planets and bodies, etc. So these gunas have avatars in charge of them. So Vishnu is in charge of Sattvagun, and he's always the Supreme Lord, and he's never contaminated by Sattva, which is material. Brahma, who springs from Garbhadakshaya's lotus in his navel, he is usually a jiva, but sometimes the Supreme Lord can take the position of Brahma as well. Shiva, which is usually the Lord, but sometimes a jiva can also take the role of Shiva. So he's in charge of Tamagun, and Brahma's in charge of Rajagun. So sometimes, of course, people in India equate them as equal, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, equal. And we have forms like that, they're all three of them together and whatever. But actually they're not equal. Vishnu is always Supreme Lord, Brahma is usually a jiva, and Shiva is sometimes a jiva. Sometimes he's the Lord, but even as the Lord, he is lesser in qualities, so we don't classify him in the same way as Vishnu. There's a little complication with Brahma. Brahma also has two forms. Usually we think of four-headed Brahma who creates the material world. So that's the normal form. He's called the Vairaja Brahma. But there's a subtle form of Brahma, a golden form, Hiranyagarbha, whom even the devatas cannot see. And he's got a subtle body made of Mahatattva, so very, very difficult to see him. And he doesn't create anything, he simply sits in the material world and enjoys very nicely. So it's another form of Brahma. And we have Shiva. So because he's classified differently from jivas, he's not a small particle of consciousness like us. He's actually like Supreme Lord. He cannot be touched by Tamagun. He has an eternal spiritual body, etc. Yeah. In the Brahma Samhita, we have this description of the milk. Vishnu is like the milk, and Shiva is like the yogurt. So they're very similar, but there's a little bit of a difference also. The quality is different, but they also related to each other. So that is the Shiva who's so-called Vishnu form. Therefore we cannot classify him as a jiva. At the same time, we don't put him in the same position as Vishnu because he manifests lesser qualities. So in nectar devotion, Shiva gets 55 qualities and Vishnu gets 60 qualities, so 5 qualities less. Among them, he cannot create universes, he cannot manifest the avatars. So he has less powers. So this Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is actually the guna avatar, and he arises from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He's never a jiva, and he's never contaminated by anything in the material world. So these are the guna avatars. So we have the Manvantara avatars. Sometimes there's a confusion about these. Who is the Manu an avatar, or is there another person who's the avatar? So the Manvantara is a period in which one Manu and his descendants rule over the Bhumandala. So within one day of Brahma, we have 14 Manvantara periods with 14 Manus and their descendants. So these are the up to we're in Vaivasvata Manvantara period now. So before that, we have the other six: Swayambhuva, Swarochisa, Uttama Tamasa, Raivata, and Chakshusha Manvantara periods. So the Manu and their descendants rule for 71 yuga cycles each. So that's the Manvantara period. So normally these Manus are not the avatar. They're jivas with special powers. They're called vibhutis, but their bodies are not spiritual. But within each Manvantara period with these Manus, there is an avatar of the Lord who presides over that 71 yuga cycles. And we also have, in these different Manvantara periods, Leela avatars appearing. So the Leela avatars are particular. They don't appear haphazardly in the day of Brahma. They appear at certain times. So some of them appear in Swayambhuva Manvantara. Some will appear in Chakshusha Manvantara. Some will appear in Vaivasvata Manvantara, our present period. So the Leela avatars, for instance, the list many appear in Swayambhuva Manvantara. So among the Leela avatars, we get some are Shaktivesh forms, are jivas, and some are fully the Lord. So Kumaras are these Avesh forms, they're jivas, four of them. And they appear in the first day of Brahma's life. And they continue throughout the whole life of Brahma. and they have an Avesh of Jnana. They teach Jnana. Narada Muni also was born on the first day of Brahma, and he also continues throughout all Brahma's life. He is a jiva also. He is empowered with bhakti. So a very special person because of the bhakti. In Swayambhuva Manvantara, Varaha appears and lifts up the earth once. He appears again later on, again, in Chakshusha Manvantara, but the first time he appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara. Matsya also appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara, first part of the day of Brahma, and he saves the Vedas. We also get Yajna appearing. He protected Swayambhuva Manu. We have Narayana appearing. They teach Vairagya, renunciation. Kapila Muni, he teaches Sankhya Bhakti and Yoga. He appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara. Dattatreya teaches knowledge of Atma, more or less Jnana. He appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara. Hayagriva appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara. He has the form of a horse, and he manifests the Vedas from his mouth, and he destroys Madhu and Kaitapa. Hamsa also appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara. He teaches Bhakti, Jnana, and Yoga. He has the form of a bird. Dhruva Priya, or Prishnigarbha, this is the form that appeared before Dhruva when he, you know, did his austerities and did bhakti and stood on one leg. Then the Lord appeared. So that's Dhruva Priya or Prishnigarbha. So he appeared in Swayambhuva Manvantara also. Rishabhadev appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara and teaches renunciation of Paramahamsa Dharma. Prithu appears. He's an Avesh avatar. He appears also in Swayambhuva Manvantara. And he levels the earth. That's his special power. Then we switch all the way up to Chakshusha Manvantara, we see here. Way down there, number six, near noontime. Vaivasvata Manvantara is in the middle, so that's about noontime of Brahma's day. Chakshusha Manvantara is about 11 o'clock or so in the day of Brahma. So in Chakshusha Manvantara, we get Nrisimhadev appearing. He kills Hiranyakasipu and saves Prahlad. We get Kurma appearing, and he holds up the Mandara Mountain while they churn the milk ocean. Of course, he also appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara. And when they churn the milk ocean, then Dhanvantari appears. And he reveals medicine. Dhanvantari also again appears in the next Manvantara, Vaivasvata Manvantara. Mohini appears. And she steals the nectar from the demons and gives it to the Devatas. And she also bewilders Shiva, Manvantara. But at the end of the Chakusha Manvantara, there's a big flood. And then Matsya appears. And he saves Satyavrata, and then Satyavrata becomes the next Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. Varaha appears and kills Hiranyaksha in this period. So Varaha appears in Svayambhuva Manvantara and also in Chakusha Manvantara. Then we come to our present Manvantara period, Vaivasvata Manvantara period. Vamana appears. It said he actually appears three times. Once in Svayambhuva's period and twice in Vaivasvata Manvantara. And Parsaram appears in the 22nd yuga cycle of Vaivasvata Manvantara and kills all the wicked kshatriyas. He's an Avesha-avatar also. And in the 24th yuga cycle in Vaivasvata Manvantara, Ramachandra appears and kills Ravana. And then in the 28th cycle, that's 4 or 5 million years later, Vyasa appears and divides the Vedas. Sometimes we take him as full avatar, and sometimes an empowered jiva also seems to enter into his body. And also in Vaivasvata Manvantara, along with Veda Vyas, we get Balaram and Krishna once in the day of Brahma. And Buddha appears as an Avesha avatar also. Every Kali Yuga, according to some. And Kalki appears at the end. He's also an Avesha avatar. And some say he appears at the end of every Kali Yuga. So in the Kali Yuga, it is said that Vishnu in full form does not appear. Therefore, it's called Tri Yuga. But yet we do have the Yuga avatar and Kalki appearing and Buddha appearing. So what are they? They are not Supreme Lord, they're Avesha avatars, the jivas. But they've got special powers. Yeah. So that was the Lila avatars, some of which were Shaktavesha avatars. So we get the Manvantara avatars. I said that there we have the Manus. And then over their reign of 71 yuga cycles, we have a particular avatar. So when Svayambhuva is the Manu, Yajna is the avatar. When Sarochicha is the Manu, Vibhu is the avatar. When Uttama is the Manu, then Satyasena is the avatar and stays for 71 yuga cycles. And when Tamasa is the Manu, Hari is the avatar. This is the person who rescued Gajendra. So he presides over that whole period. In Raivata period, Vaikuntha is the avatar. In Chakshusha Manvantara, Ajita is the form. This is the form who sat on top of the Mandara mountain when they were turning the Nakhosha. And Vaivasvata Manvantara is presided by Vamanadev. That's our present form. So he's the avatar for our particular Manvantara period until the end of that period, Vamanadev. Now, this is Hari, and it's Ajita on top of the Mandara mountain. And in the future, that is after, we're at noontime now, Svayambhuva Manvantara period. After that, we have, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, all up to 6 o'clock in the evening, we have Brahma's day. We have different Manus reigning for a Manvantara period, and we have the corresponding avatars also who preside over each period. These are also discussed in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam. So, then we have the Yuga avatar, or the Yuga avatars. They appear, they are expansions from the Manvantara avatar. So we saw there were Manvantara avatars like this. So then they expand into the Yuga avatars. The Lila avatars are said to appear from Garbhadaksha Vishnu. So, who were the Yuga avatars? So we have 1,000 cycles of yugas in one day of Brahma, and Brahma has 360 days in his year, and he lives for 100 years. So we have so many of these yuga avatars appearing within the lifetime of Brahma. So we have four yugas. Each yuga has an avatar. So in Satya Yuga, we have a white form, and he's called Sukla, which means white. In Treta Yuga, there's a red form, who's called Rakta. In Dvapara Yuga, we have a blackish form called Shyama. And in Kali Yuga, we have a black form called Krishna, who is usually an empowered Jiva, because in Kali Yuga, there's no form of the Lord appearing directly, so it's a Shaktivesh form. So these forms teach their particular dharma. So the Sukla form teaches meditation. The Treta form, Rakta, teaches yajna, homa, sacrifices. The Dvapara Yuga form, who is blackish, teaches deity worship, archana. And the Kali Yuga form, who is blackish, teaches sankirtan. So these are the yuga avatars. I think Jiva Goswami says that usually the Dvapara form is green, greenish form. So we can class the different avatars in terms of the amount of powers that they manifest. They're actually one Supreme Lord, and he will have a particular form which will manifest some of the qualities, but not all the qualities. And so in other words, they are like amsas. And then we get the Purna forms who manifest all the qualities. So this is like the moon. We had Purnima, I think, yesterday or day before, was Purnima. So that's when the moon is full. The moon shines with all of its light. But if you look today, the moon is a little bit less. After the Purnima 1-2, is it 30 or something? Anyway, it starts decreasing in size, decreasing in size, decreasing in size, decreasing in size as the days goes on. Same moon, one moon, but less light is showing. So similarly, different forms of the Lord will show different amounts of qualities. Some show more qualities, some show less qualities. So according to that, we can classify them. The qualities, of course, we can say are how they control others, how much sweetness they have, how much mercy they show, how much display of power over karma and time they have. So, I said Shakti is there in the different forms, but we have Shakti in a lamp, a little deepa, a little flame. The same Shakti is basically the same Shakti as in the bonfire, I mean, big fire. It's the same Shakti is there ultimately, but we can say that that one candle flame could start a forest fire also, just as the big fire could start it. So the Shakti is ultimately the same. But it may not manifest to the same degree, so therefore you cannot heat yourself on a cold night with a little candle flame, but you can do that with a big bonfire. So the Shakti is there, but it may not manifest to the same degree in the different avatars. So, we'll put the Evesh ones on the bottom, because they're not even Supreme Lord, they're Jivas with special powers given by the Lord, so they're put at the bottom. And we have, the Shaktivesh forms are eternal, so that you don't become a Shaktivesh avatar. These are eternal forms of spiritual bodies. So, Kumaras, Narada, Prithu, Parsaram, Kalki, Buddha, the Kali Yuga avatars, and Shesha, who holds up the earth. These are considered to be Shaktivesh forms. The other Shesha, who is the bed of Vishnu, he is considered to be full form of the Lord, not a Shaktivesh avatar form. So this one that holds up the Bhumandala on the top of his head like this, he is considered to be a Shaktivesh Jiva. So we come to the full forms of the Lord, not jivas. If they show very little powers and they only appear for a short time, they're called prabhava forms. And we have even there the subcategory. Those are sort of the least amount of powers. They're put in one category. So we have Mohini, Hamsa, and Yuga avatars. Show a little more power. Then we have persons like Dhanvantari, Rishabha, Vyasa, Dattatreya, and Kapila. These are sages that gave knowledge. They don't show so much powers. They're all prabhava forms. The vaibhava forms show more powers than the prabhava forms. So we have Kurma, Matsya, Naranarayan, Prishnagarbha, Balaram, 14 Manvantara avatars. They last longer. And we have more powers, Paravasta forms, Varaha, Hayagriva, Hari, Vaikuntha, Ajita, and Vamana. And among the Paravasta, we had the Purna forms, that's Nishima, Rama, and Krishna. So we have Avesh forms, Prabhava forms, Vaibhava forms, Paravasta forms, and Purna forms at the top. We can say they're all one Supreme Lord, but he manifests different amounts of qualities in these. So the one that those that manifest the most qualities are called Purna. And among the Purna forms, Krishna's at the top, so he's called Swayam Bhagavan. One Supreme Lord, but manifestation of different amounts of qualities. So therefore, we classify them in this way and put Krishna at the top. Of course, Krishna also manifests different amounts of qualities in different places. So in Dwarka, he's called Purna. In Mathura, he's called Purnatara, which means more complete. And in Vrindavan, he's called Purnatama, most complete. So in other words, Krishna manifests all of his qualities most fully in Vrindavan. A little bit less in Mathura, a little bit less in Dwarka. Even in Vrindavan, Krishna will manifest different amounts of qualities according to the different rasas that the devotees have. So those in Shanta don't see all the qualities in full. Those in Dasya appreciate more qualities. Those in Sakya, more. Those in Vatsalya, more qualities. And those in Madhurya Rasa, they get the best manifestation, most perfect manifestation of Krishna. In the nectar devotion, one of the qualities of Vishnu is this Hata Ari Gati Dayakaha. He gives a nice destination to the enemies he kills. Doesn't say that he takes them to Vaikuntha or liberates them or anything. Just they get good results. So they don't necessarily go to the spiritual world. So this is what usually happens when the other forms of the Lord kill a demon. They get some position in the material world. Maybe they go to Swargaloka, enjoy as a king, etc. So when Narsimhadev killed Hiranyakasipu, big demon, that is killing a demon, then what happened to Hiranyakasipu? Did he go to Vaikuntha? No. Did he get liberation in Brahman? No. He became Ravana. Oops. He got Ravana. So he became a king, a nice, enjoyable, enjoying materialist as a king. He got some nice position in the material world and enjoyed as a king, but he was a big demon again. Huh? Ramchandra then killed Ravana. What happened to him? So he got killed and he became Shishupala. So he also didn't get liberation. When Krishna killed Shishupala, what happened to him? He went to Vaikuntha. So why three different results for the same jiva in three lifetimes meeting the Lord? So it shows that Krishna is very special. So it's explained that when this jiva, who was Hiranyakasipu, saw Nrisimhadeva, and he said, oh, this is Vishnu. Vishnu is a material person. He's a king, somebody who's got special powers by some pious activities, or has got a lion form or whatever. So then I'll fight with him and try to kill him. So he was not really attracted to that form. Even though he saw that form, he wasn't attracted to that form. So he didn't concentrate on it, and he got killed. Then he became Ravana. And then Ravana, he fought with Ramchandra. And he said, oh, Ramchandra, he's become this king by his punyas, his pious activities. So I could fight with him and kill him. And he didn't think too much about his beauty or anything. He just fought with him, that's all. Didn't concentrate on him. Then he became Shishupala. So Shishupala throughout his life hated Krishna as he had in his previous births. He hated Vishnu. So he also hated Krishna. But he could not stop thinking of Krishna, because Krishna had such a beautiful form. He could not stop chanting Krishna's name, because that name had some attraction in it. So therefore he became absorbed in Krishna, even though it was thinking of an enemy. Somehow he got absorbed in that form of Krishna. So that was the special quality of Krishna, more attractive. More attractive than Ramchandra, more attractive than Nrisimhadeva. So the same jiva saw the Lord three times, but he didn't get really absorbed and attracted to those forms. But even though he did have demon eyes and demon consciousness, when he saw that form of Krishna, somehow or other, even though he couldn't really see the spiritual form, he got attracted to Krishna and to Krishna's name. So he got absorbed in that. So what did that absorption do? Because his mind was absorbed in the Lord, even if it was in hatred, he gradually got purified by that constant absorption because of Krishna's attractive qualities. So at a certain point, when Krishna understood, oh, all of his bad qualities have been annihilated, then he took his Sudarshan Chakra and he cut off his head. And when the Sudarshan Chakra touched Shishupala, the Sudarshan Chakra was actually not a weapon, it was non-different from Krishna. So it was filled with prema. And then Shishupala got prema. And he was qualified for Vaikuntha. So this is the explanation given in the Puranas of why Shishupala finally, when he was killed, he didn't become another evil king in the material world, but he went to the spiritual world. Why? Because of the attractive qualities of Krishna. So this story shows that though Nrisimhadeva and Rama are very great and have many qualities, still Krishna is very special and more attractive, such that Shishupala could not stop thinking of him. And therefore he went to the spiritual world. So that shows the supreme position of Krishna. As I said, he is Swayam Bhagavan, he's put in a very special position above all others. So he has special power over controlling others, power over karma and time, special mercy and special sweetness. So the mercy we see in the case of many, how the demons, like Putana, get to the spiritual world also, or even Agasura, they get a body in the spiritual world. It's only mercy of the Lord, nothing else. And we don't see that with the other forms of the Lord, that they don't go. And, of course, Krishna has sweet qualities, which are mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. So he has 64 qualities as compared to the Vishnu forms. So these four qualities are qualities of sweetness. So sweetness here means, madhurya means intimacy, intimate love. So the form of the Krishna is such that it invokes a very intimate form of loving relationships, that type of form. So the sweet form is the form of a young boy who's a cowherd in Vrindavan. And this is very, very attractive for him. He is surrounded by all sorts of devotees with sweet relationships. So he has billions and billions of servants, billions and billions of friends, cowherd boy friends, billions and billions of elders who are in Vatsalya Rasa, like parents, and billions of gopis in Madhurya Rasa. So all the rasas are represented with all sorts of intimate devotees. The other forms of the Lord manifest mainly Dasya Rasa, and the other forms are very limited. So Vishnu has a relationship of Madhurya Rasa with Lakshmi and a few others, but that's it, not everybody. And Sakya Rasa, Ramchandra and his brothers, three brothers got Sakya Rasa, I suppose. And that's it. So Vatsalya Rasa, Vishnu doesn't have a mother and father. Ramchandra has a mother and father, but nobody else has Vatsalya Rasa. Everyone else is Dasya. Krishna has all these rasas with many, many devotees, and it's very intimate as well, Madhurya. So the devotees are all sweet. And because of the sweetness of Krishna and the sweetness of the devotees, we have very sweet pastimes, remarkable pastimes, which do not manifest with the other forms of the Lord. So, of course, the ultimate pastime is considered to be the Rasleela. So that's a remarkable pastime. It's so remarkable that even Lakshmi, when she sees that Rasleela, she is astonished, completely astonished. And then she wants to join it, but she cannot join it because she's got the wrong form. She's not a gopi. So, astonishing pastimes of Krishna. Or we see even in different rasas. So we have astonishing pastimes in Madhurya Rasa, astonishing pastimes in Vatsalya Rasa. So we have Yasoda tying up Krishna. And Krishna becomes afraid of Mother Yasoda with a stick, etc. So, and gets tied up by Mother Yasoda, even though the Supreme Lord never gets tied up, but Krishna gets tied up by Mother Yasoda. Because that's the example of the sweetness that arises in Vatsalya Rasa, parental rasa. And Krishna with the cowherd boy, Sakya Rasa. We see that there's descriptions in the Bhagavatam how Krishna and the cowherd boys are playing games. And then sometimes Krishna loses the game and he has to carry a cowherd boy on his shoulders because he's lost. So this again is Krishna in Sakya Rasa. Or sometimes the cowherd boys wrestle with Krishna and Krishna loses. So these remarkable pastimes in the different rasas are unique to Krishna. And lastly, his flute, which is very famous for its sound. The sound of the flute is so sweet that anyone who hears it immediately develops a very sweet type of prema, Madhurya prema. And the rocks melt and the rivers stop flowing and the trees start blossoming, etc. The cows start crying, the birds stop going into trance, etc. And of course the people, they all develop some very, very sweet emotions for Krishna as a result of the flute. So that's a very, very special aspect of Krishna also. These are the four sweet aspects of Krishna that are mentioned in the nectar devotion. So in this way, Krishna is very, very special, most attractive in his Vrindavan form. Though he manifests less intensity in his Dwarka and Mathura, still, even the Dwarka form is very, very attractive. Even though he's called Purna, not Purnatama, still, it does show some attractive qualities which are not there in the other forms of the Lord. Okay, that's it. Fine. Any question there?
The definition that you gave, Shakyamuni Shabbos, like a lot of people that want to present pro-publish Shakyamuni Shabbos.
Yeah.
The definition you gave, Prabhupada doesn't really fit into that definition.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
what would be the proper way to see Srila Prabhupada, or should we try to see him like in his ontological position?
Well, the problem with that is that anybody in the future could also claim such things. So-and-so's not, of course, they even do that now. Somebody's claiming to be a Kalki, or somebody's claiming to be Bishakashan, claimed to be Mahaprabhu, whatever. So when we start making claims of avatarship, then it gets a little complicated because everybody can do the same thing. You say, why he's so special like that? So that's why generally they limit these forms and say nobody else can be these forms because they are the forms. At the same time, we do want to attribute special qualities to Prabhupada, so perhaps we can stick him in the vibhuti category. Okay? So special persons who have special powers are called vibhutis. So the devatas have special powers, manus have special powers, great sages have special powers. So they have a special position because of that.
And also Prabhupada mentions that Ram appeared, he talks about at least a million years ago or so, but you're saying that Vaishvata Manu appeared in the 24th cycle, so that's many, many millions of years ago.
Yeah, 16 million years ago.
16 million years ago.
Yeah.
So, I'm just thinking like this, has that been there for 16 million years?
Also. Of course, they keep rebuilding and rebuilding. That's what happens, you know.
It just seems that, I mean, his worship in India is like, it's like a fresh sort of thing, but he has been gone for 16 million years.
Yeah. Well, we see Narasimhadeva is not even in Vaivasvata Manvantara. He's in a Chakshusha Manvantara, which is many, many, many more millions of years previous to that. Yeah.
Also, last question. You gave the explanation of why Chichipol got that special benediction he went back to Kunta.
Yeah.
But we know that in the beginning he was given
The boon. Okay.
The boon, the tree burst. So he wasn't destined to go back anyway.
Yeah. So that's true. But then Rupa Goswami says that in other days of Brahma, not like that. So it's a regular jiva takes the role of the demon, and then he gets his, he goes up that way. So it's not every day that Jai and Vijay fall out of their positions in Vaikuntha and come down. It's a one-time affair, and regularly it's some jiva that goes through three births like this.
So sometimes mentioned that
Jagai
Madai. Like some sort of guest appearance.
I suppose we can say special forms. Out of attraction to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or something, they took those forms.
Yeah. But, I mean, they achieved,
yes. Supreme position of Krishna, you're saying?
Yes. I mean, rather than explain the hierarchy, which did explain this sort of presentation, Prabhupada said it's like, all right, the very low, supreme personality of
So it's a matter of preaching, I suppose. Some people may accept, some people, I mean, find it difficult to accept. So that's where the discretion of the preacher comes into play, that, you know, don't preach to the faithless, for instance. So, if they believe in a form of God, okay, that's good, and then we can work on that, but they may not accept, you know, Krishna, they may accept another form. Maybe that's their rasa, who knows. So according to the person, we have to preach differently in some cases. Other people, they don't have any difficulty accepting Krishna as the highest and accept it.
I was wondering if that verse from Yaktiya, you know, Krishna Shakti Vinayaka,
Maybe
that's why they're Prabhupada Chakravarti, but it could be what he's saying to the Gurudev.
Yeah, because all devotees have some shakti. Or what we can say, that all devotees do have shakti, because the bhakti is internal shakti of Krishna. So all devotees have a little bit of that. Some have a little more, and some have a great amount of that shakti in them. So those who have more, then obviously we're going to give them a lot of respect. The bhakti shakti is manifesting to a high degree. Yeah.
So just, I have a few questions, I think, a lot of interesting points there. The first part you're talking about Swayamrupa, and you're indicating those Swayamrupa forms. So that gave you the impression there's more than one. From reading the Raghavagamrita, it seems there's more than one Swayamrupa. But yet we see in the Adivida 5th chapter, it talks about verse Ekalisha Krishna Asabhivritta, that there's only one Supreme Krishna. All the other dancing makes him do so, and Prabhupada elaborates in the purport that all the other Vishnu incarnations, also all the other expansions of Krishna, all dance as Krishna makes him do so. So he's actually one.
Yeah, so he is one, but he can have many forms, all the Prakash forms, for instance. So Krishna is one, but he expands in 16,008 palaces, or Krishna's with all the gopis. So he is Swayamrupa, but then he becomes Prakash form and manifesting those forms. But then he may also take the Dwarka form, which is slightly different, and is Purna, as according to Purna Tama. So that's what we can say, not the Swayamrupa, it's the Vrindavan form, and then there's a little bit lesser manifestation of that.
So when he's manifesting the Vrindavan, Pastime, Rasa, etc., is that still the Swayamrupa?
Yeah, it's all Swayamrupa.
But it's just through the Prakasa agency he's expanding.
But
then the Dwarka, etc., that's not the same.
Yes, slightly less. I don't think Rupa Goswami doesn't distinguish that, but I would say, we could say, we still want to distinguish the Dwarka form from the Vishnu forms or from the other forms. They're still more special.
As you explain later, they're not as important.
So we could say Swayamrupa, Purna, Purnatama, and Purnatara forms like that, but he's the highest is the Vrindavan form.
Okay. Then just question on meaning Garbhada. Garbha means womb, doesn't it?
Garbha means a womb.
How does that relate to the understanding of Garbha?
Oh, because we can say that's the womb, that's the within the universe. The universe is like a big shell, and it's the womb of the universe, inside the shell of the universe, like inside the womb of a mother, I would think. So then, you have Vishnu lying in the womb, so to speak, of the universe. Garbha.
Okay, another question. Swayamrupa
Maharaj
is often described as being the Supreme Mother, the original Supreme. And he's sometimes described as an incarnation of the Lord. Does this mean devotee?
Well, Swayambhuva sometimes refers, this means self-manifesting, so it sometimes refers to the Supreme Lord, and sometimes to Brahma also, so we have to be careful with the usage of the term, but it's not referring to Swayambhuva Manu then, in those cases, same word.
But in the fourth canto, Prabhupada is referring to Swayambhuva Manu as being the Supreme Mother, and
the incarnation of the Lord, so I'm wondering if that means Vibhuti. Vibhuti, yeah, the Manus are Vibhutis, definitely, so.
But the Prabhupada seems to distinguish Swayambhuva as being different from the other.
Well, probably the first one, that's why. I suppose. But I don't know.
But then you're talking about Shaktivesha. Avesha means like a covering, right?
Avesh means a possession. So the Avesh of Shakti. Okay. They're bestowed a particular Shakti of the Lord.
Because Vesha means dress, right?
Avesha, or absorption, or like that. One becomes avesh, absorbed in something, avesh. So they get an absorption of power, I suppose. Bestowal of power.
Then, Hiranyakashipu Rama and Shishupal. There's an interesting purport in the fifth chapter of the Adilila again, where Shishupal is describing that sequence you're talking about. He's quoting a conversation from Maitreya Rishi and Parashurama.
Yeah.
He talks about how that unfolds, but then later on in the same purport he says, we shouldn't always think that, you know, when these demons are appearing in Krishna's pastime, this Chandra Vijaya, this is only a unique kind of a...
Yeah, it's a one-time affair. Or that the giant Vijaya did it. But the pastime can occur in other days of Brahma, but then it's not giant Vijaya.
But it's the same thing happened when you have giant Vijaya, and Ravana and
Kumbhakarna done by Rishikesh. We can get a demon appearing three times, but it's not that they fell from the spiritual world. So it's not giant Vijaya, it's a jiva of some sort who just, that's a big demon, three times. That's all.
In one of the slides it said Krishna in Kali Yuga, and then asterisk.
Oh, that's his color, yeah. He's called Krishna because he's blackish, black color.
Oh, yeah, but underneath that it said empowered Jiva.
Yeah. Yeah, so in Kali Yuga, the Lord does not appear, that's why he's called Tri Yuga. So then, but yeah, we do have Yuga Avatar coming, or other forms like Buddha, so therefore, Jiva Goswami says, therefore they're Shaktavesh forms.
Oh, but yeah. It's not talking about Krishna.
No, it's not the Krishna who's different. Because he's Swayam Bhagavan, and he doesn't appear in Kali Yuga, he appears in Dwarpa Yuga, a different form. And then we have an exceptional case, because in our Kali Yuga, he's not black at all, and he's not a Shaktavesh avatar, he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's not different from Krishna. So he's not even a regular avatar, he's Krishna himself in a golden color. So that's an exceptional case.
So, who is that Krishna then?
It's a jiva that's blackish in color who propagates Nama Sankirtan.
When was that?
Well, yeah, all the 999 times in Brahma's day in Kali Yuga.
Not in his Kali Yuga.
Not in our Kali Yuga. No. This is Lord Chaitanya comes in ours, and he's
so
golden color.
Krishna?
Huh?
Someone called Krishna.
Yeah, who's blackish in color. Yeah, and he propagates Nama Sankirtan. He's empowered by the Lord. No.
I mean, he's the same, right?
No, he's different, because Lord Chaitanya is not a jiva. He's not different from Krishna.
No, but I mean, he did the same. He propagates
Nam Sankirtan, but not particularly Hare Krishna, names of the Lord, but not, because they may be preaching about Vishnu instead, through Nam Sankirtan. Vishnu, 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 Narayan, 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 or whatever.
And I've never seen anywhere the forms of the red form, which was in
Treta Yuga, isn't it? Yeah. It's described in the Bhagavatam, I think, in 11th canto, no? There's a whole description of the different forms there, and he's reddish in color, and he has yagya spoons in his hand, shrukantruva in his hands, and, you know, he teaches yagya and whatever.
But I've never seen anywhere
the picture. Oh, there's a few pictures. If you look around, you can find a few pictures. Not very commonly seen, but they're depicted. And the white form, I don't know at all what that form is.
And another thing is about Narada Muni. So Narada Muni, he was a sadhana siddha, right? Sadhana siddha?
Well, he looked like a sadhana siddha, but then the commentary is that's more or less what we call a lila. Because he's actually an eternal form, so he's just playing a little like Krishna is born in Kamsa's prison, but he's not really born because he's eternal also. So like that, he went through this pastime of being cursed and then being born into the son of a Sudrani, Sudra woman, and then he grows up and then he attains prema. So, but then it's more or less a lila.
But in the Bhagavad Gita, he
doesn't mention it. But obviously, we find him Brihad Bhagavatam, and he's wandering all over the universe in different points of time.
Yeah, but that was after he took birth. He tells the whole story how
It's the previous day, actually. It happened previous days, the whole story, and then it comes up to our present day of Brahma. But I think for several days of Brahma, Gopal Kumar was traveling around in different places. Of course, we find that Narada Muni's born out of Brahma. This first, when Brahma is born, then Narada Muni is coming out there very early in the whole lifetime of Brahma also. He's there.
This is just a comment on those two questions there about this incarnation of Krishna, but then also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions Kali Kali Navarupa Krishna Avatar, but in Kali Yuga, the name of Krishna is also the incarnation of Lord of the Age.
Yeah.
So even though it says Tribute, he actually does it in the four yugas.
Well, yeah, but then it's usually he's a Shaktivesh avatar in Kali Yuga. So therefore, he's avatar, but he's
but
also Shiva.
What I'm saying is the name is also the incarnation of Krishna.
Yeah, so then that can refer to a Shaktivesh avatar also, a different name, because of the color only, which means blackish. He's blackish in color, and he's called Krishna because of that, but it's not the Krishna that we know.
Have been on earth,
and
how long humans have actually been on earth?
Well, Brahma, we're halfway through Brahma's life, and we're in the noontime of the 51st year, I believe it is, of Brahma's life. So we're at noontime of that, you know, and noontime means 71 yuga cycles times 6, 7 times 7, times 7. Yeah, so that we're in the middle, and then there's, you know, but then so many other days and so many years, and so 50 years before that. So, and in each beginning of Brahma's life, then he creates the planetary systems, then he creates all the bodies, including humans. So from the very first day of Brahma's life, which was 50 years ago of Brahma's life, he created human beings. Now what happens is at the end of the day, they disappear again. He has to start creating each day. He has to start recreating everything again. So we can say the last creation for the human beings was 71 times 6 yuga cycles previously at the beginning of this particular day. So that's 4 million times 71 times 6. Whatever it is.
So humans have existed since the beginning of creation, so to speak?
Well, this day, the creation that takes place on this day. But the creation took place previous day, for 50 years previously.
And obviously the jiva is eternal, so what's the first body that the jiva takes? Is that Lord Brahma?
According to your karma. And you had karma from a previous universe before you enter into this universe. When Brahma creates this universe, there were a previous universe you were in, and you had karma there. So then, according to that karma, you take your body in this universe. Now,
I suppose that kind of answers my next question. I had someone ask me one day, question reincarnation, and questioning how can you be constantly reincarnating while the population is increasing?
Well, it depends on what population. Some populations are increasing and koala bears are decreasing and other animals are going extinct and this and that, so humans may be increasing but other species are decreasing. Yeah,
that's kind of my answer.
Yeah. And of course this is not all the species. We have devatas. We don't know how many devatas are up there in Svargaloka or in Brahmaloka, how many people are up there also, we don't know. Or in Hellish planets, we don't know the population there. There's, you know, so many lower planetary systems and so many upper planetary systems, we don't know the populations there at all. They could be increasing, decreasing, you know, also.
So you spoke about the jiva takes a body according to its karma. So there's a time when the jiva never had a body?
Well, when he's in Mahavishnu, no body. And then, but it's, then he comes out and then he gets another body again. And then when the universes are all destroyed, then he gives up all of his subtle body, gross body, and his karma is kind of waiting for him, but it's not doing anything. Then he goes in Mahavishnu, no body, no subtle body. Then he comes out again, and then he takes his karma again, and he gets bodies again. So repetitive process of going into Mahavishnu, coming out of Mahavishnu.
A silly question put this into my mind. The Jaya Vijaya,
Do they have days off, or do they concentrate on duty?
Do they?
Jaya and Vijaya.
Do they have?
Do they have days off, some holidays, or do they constantly work as doorkeepers?
Oh, well, in the spiritual world, doorkeepers, well, it's just like everybody in the spiritual world, they have their, you know, the pastimes with the Lord, so work for them is not work. It's their service to the Lord. Yeah? Of course, they don't have to stay there all the time, obviously, because they have a change of guards, I suppose. And actually, there's many guards because there's four gates, four doors on the four directions, and there's seven walls. So there's seven pairs of guards in four directions. So there's many, many. It's not only Jaya and Vijaya. There's so many other guards there as well. And of course, they will have replacements when they go take rest or whatever. Okay. Hare Krishna.